So let's go back to. So the next thing that's important, and it slowly increased over time as we got to know more about these things, is that this being America, we have a very individualistic view of the world. I don't know why this is not showing up. There she is. Okay. And in fact, we all are intertwined organisms. I don't know if you have a good zoo in Philadelphia, but I used to hang out in the Brookfield Zoo in Chicago, and we are just a bunch of monkeys who chatter and talk and mess with each other, but we really don't exist as individuals. We are here for each other, with each other, we think about each other, and it's interesting how psychiatry has come to think about people purely as individuals, sort of independent of their social contact, independent of where things come from. You have a certain diagnosis, and that diagnosis has nothing to do with the social conditions under which you grow up. But we are completely social creatures. I'll get into the brain a little bit further, but just to illustrate it, is when we took our advanced Shakespeare acting training course, we had a colleague, Luisa Franconi, who actually became pregnant during that training. And she called her baby after the place where the training was, Lenox, as in Lenox, Massachusetts. And 8 months later, she sends a little video around to her fellow actors of the Shakespeare course. And that's what we have brains for. We have brains to make noises together. When you measure what happens with this mother and this baby, their heart rate gets attuned to each other, their breathing gets attuned to each other, and your brain starts to resonate with another brain. And when your brain resonates with another brain, you feel a sense of pleasure and joy and connection. That's really what life is sort of all about. And trauma almost invariably has to do with the breakdown of this system. You saw this in the soldier. He is completely living in his own world, and there's nothing about him that really resonates with these other people. He doesn't resonate with his grandma. He doesn't resonate with the girl in the store, and he's all by himself. And now we have all these discussions. Why do these soldiers commit suicide? That's why they commit suicide. If you chronically are out of sync with everybody else around you, and you are feel like a total nutcake that nobody understands, and you have these reactions that alienate everybody, you know, life is no longer worth living. So the question is, how do you get people back in touch with each other? And of course, the people who are very good at that is the army in the first place. They start off with basic training, again, not something that many of you guys probably know a lot about, but I used to work at Camp Lejeune for a while, also with the U.S. Marine Corps. And, you know, you get these kids who go into the Army who are not exactly the cream of the crop kids in America, the kids with the greatest prospects, who are really oftentimes pretty low-level kids, and they go through basic training. And what they do in basic training, they sing together. They move together, they march together, they climb together. They don't have sermons about patriotism or stuff like that. They come together do complex stuff. Just like the people who put this conference together probably will be friends for life, because this is hard to put a conference together. Whenever you do something together with other people, you get that sense of connection and pleasure by activating this part of your brain. So here's an old colleague of mine who early in his career goes into a newborn nursery. I recently had a grandson who I was with also 2 days after he was born, and I think Andy was better at it than I was. So he goes into a newborn nursery, he sticks out his tongue, and this newborn baby sticks out his tongue. This baby, if any, probably most of you probably have had kids or grandchildren, that 2-hour-old babies, there's no brain there. It's like there's nothing there. They want to suck and they want to poop and that's about it. But when you stick out your tongue, they stick out your tongue. Huh? That's sort of an illustration of how we are attuned to each other. That's who we are. The most elementary thing, we are imitative creatures. And this is what the brain looks like of a kid that age. All the yellow is not there yet. So there's almost no brain at this point. And yet the most elementary part of who we are is to get attuned to each other. You know, example. It's more likely that this kid will grow up with a cross with a snake through on his arm, let's say, than most of our kids. Although your kids may also get. Our kids are not carbon copies of us. Huh? And so we start off with movement, attunements, interactions. Just showing out little tapes of. So I loved the Quaker meeting in Boston, but we didn't do enough of that. So I stopped going. So a good example of trauma occurred on 9/11, because it's something that we all happened to all of us. For me, it was a very big day because trauma came home. I worked in South Africa, I worked in India, other parts of the world, but I'd never seen trauma up close so much as that particular day. And I was very curious how we would react to that. And I really looked at it very carefully. And our clinic is very much a child-oriented clinic. And it was always very clear that children are basically okay as long as their parents are okay with them. That we are such interactive creatures that a good example of that is that after the Second World War, Anna Freud, Sigmund's daughter, did a study in England. What has happened is that during the Second World War, the Germans were bombarding London. Has any of you read Oliver Sacks by any chance, his autobiography? Huh? So Oliver Sacks, in his last autobiography, he writes that there were two huge traumatic experiences in his life. The first one was when his family that lived in East London, when he was like 5 years old or something, people said, the Germans are bombing us, why don't you go to the countryside? And he went to live on a farm together with tens of thousands of other kids from London. And when these kids from London came back, they were very traumatized by the fact that they were away from their parents, while the kids who stayed in London were okay. As the first study that showed that the attachment system trumps the trauma system. That as long as you feel secure with the people who are in the immediate vicinity, you're largely protected against getting traumatized, particularly when you're a young kid, but it goes on to a large degree for the rest of your life. That being part of a safe environment will protect you. And that, so it's very traumatic that he was removed from his mother. And the second thing that Oliver Sacks talks about is the second big trauma was that he told his mom when he was 19 years old that he was gay. And his mom said, "I curse the day that you were born." And that is something you cannot talk your way out of anymore. Once that has been said, that will always be part of your relationship. So again, the attachment relationship is primary. And so my poster boy for this is Noam Saul. Noam Saul is the son of Esther Perel and Jack Saul. Some of you may know Esther. And on September 11th, 2001. Noam, who at this time is 5.5 years old, has just started school a few days before his first grade in PS 234 in Manhattan, the school that's right underneath the World Trade Center. So he goes into his classroom at 8:45 in the morning. 7 minutes later, the planes hit the World Trade Center, much closer than this picture actually shows because his school is right underneath it. The kids go into a panic, pandemonium breaks loose, kids run downstairs, the parents who have just dropped off the kids run back, and they start running through the streets of Manhattan to get away from stuff. And I love to show this picture because it shows us how all of us see what we have been trained to see. When I show this picture to mental health professionals and I say, so what do you see in this picture? Mental health professionals usually say, I see very scared people. I see people in a panic. And I say, well, that's an inference. What you really see is people running. But once you become a mental health professional, you don't pay much attention to the body anymore, and you think about people's emotions. But what people do in response to trauma is that they move. And moving is terribly important because that's what we have a body for, because our job as people is to make sure that our body is okay and to put us out of harm's way or to fight off our attackers. And as we know today, that if you get traumatized, if you're exposed to something terrible, as long as you can do something, as long as you can take some action, you're most likely to be okay. But if there's nothing you can do, then you get traumatized. So who gets traumatized? Kids who live with alcoholic parents, because they cannot run away. Women who have their own issues with independence, who are living with an abusive husband, or men who live with an abusive wife who cannot get away from that abusive wife either. And so trauma is an issue of immobilization, being unable to take action, get away from stuff. And so what happens after 9/11 is that, of course, everybody is very concerned what happens, and all of us trauma people go down to New York to figure out what is going to happen with the trauma. And as it turns out, that in New York, almost nobody got traumatized by 9/11. Why was that? Because there's this outpouring of support. Nobody was blamed for what happened. I was just talking with Lorraine, how nice New York became after 9/11. So I go to New York September 15th or something, and everybody's so nice. I said, we can have another cup of coffee. And I don't recognize New York for several months. And then February 2002, somebody tells me to go fuck myself. And they go, New York is on the way to recovery. But that really shows you how our response, the New York response of the East Coast, was extraordinary, because after you get traumatized, and there's an evolutionary thing, some people become extraordinarily thoughtful, because if you become thoughtful, then you can recover. And so oftentimes when communities get traumatized, people are very nice to each other. Why are they nice to each other? Because they know that your body is filled with stress hormones that makes you want to kill people and to fight. And if you don't calm that down, you get what happened in Baghdad and other parts of the world, where the hatred and the rage gets fueled. So you need to be very nice to traumatized people right afterwards to calm that physiology down, because what happens after you get traumatized is your whole body is set to fight. And so the best thing is to make people safe, make people feel calm, and make people feel calm in their bodies. And so that's why we hug people. That's why we stroke people. We deal with their bodies. We make their bodies feel safe. I bet you guys have more to say about all that, right? Like, because this is, I'm just competing with you a little bit. Like, so it turns out that nobody gets PTSD. And then we have these meetings, and at one of these meetings, one of my colleagues shows this picture. And I say, that's fascinating. That's the Brooklyn Bridge. And I bet that nobody from New Jersey is on the Brooklyn Bridge. So what I realize is that when people are exposed to something really scary, not only do they start running, but they start running in a particular direction. And the direction is the direction of home. And so we have a homing device in our brains. And I got very intrigued with that. So I did a large survey about the number of telephone calls that were made on September 11th versus September 10th in Boston. There were like 25 times as many phone calls on September 11th because everybody was calling their loved ones. And when you hear the voice of your loved ones, you feel calmer, even though your loved ones were just as messed up and insecure about what's going on. So you make these connections with each other. And so you go home. And then what does the research show is that almost nobody in New York got PTSD except people who were married to traumatized people who felt scared of their spouses, basically. So what made it the trauma traumatic was the home environment to which you came home to make you feel safe again. And then another interesting thing happens. So we have these meetings, because you know, a lot of organizations call the experts together to give advice on how to treat people. And I had started to write my book, The Body Keeps the Score. And when you write a book about the body, you actually need to learn something about the body. So for 5 years before I wrote this book, I went through every conceivable form of body psychotherapy and Feldenkrais and Alexander and Rolfing and all kinds of things. Very nice. And in August 2001, so 2 weeks before 9/11, I was in an improv class. And we were moving together and rolling over each other. At some point, some fairly heavy-set woman and I are rolling on the floor together. And at some point, the music stops. She's lying on top of me. And she goes like, isn't this amazing? You know, I used to be a patient in and out of McLean Hospital on heavy doses of medication. But since I've been doing this improv stuff, I'm feeling so much better. I'm not taking any medications anymore. And she's beaming. And I say, boy, I can see how happy you are. But you're getting a little heavy. So could you please get off me? But, you know, when 9/11 happened, I have this very vivid memory of this stuff. I'm feeling so much better. I'm not taking any medications anymore. And she's beaming. And I say, boy, I can see how happy you are, but you're getting a little heavy, so could you please get off me? But, you know, when 9/11 happened, I have this very vivid memory of this really happy person lying on top of me. And I go, like, that seems to really have helped her trauma. So I'm in these meetings, and I say to people, you know, we really don't know what the best treatment is for trauma, so let's not pretend like we know more than we do. It's a terrible thing to people. So people rarely like that when you tell them that you should not pretend like you know more than you. And let's just open up treatment for all comers. Anybody who has something to offer that they can actually describe what they do, are willing to fill out rating skills, let's just open it up, just find out what's helpful to people.